The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
Sorry, can you move your hair? I just realized from the...
Oh, yeah, that creates a problem sometimes.
I'm going to give you this to keep it a...
Oh, sure.
You never wear your hair up, I realize.
No,
but
I never do. Thank you.
Ben Liz and I are getting our nails done, believe it or not.
I know.
Talking about hair and nails, yeah.
Yeah. The it's going to be a Bernie Broad night out.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. On today's episode, I speak to Liza Featherstone. Then for the Patreon-only episode, Liza and I talk about pseudo-feminists who like to bully, vilify, or in the case of the treatment of Liza, erase leftist feminists. But that's not all. I also talk to friend of the show and Struggle Session co-host Leslie Lee. It's a really cool chat about the Joker, film, politics, and it's cool because it takes place in a ride share. As Leslie and I go to and then back from a Pod Damn America Antifada live taping that he participated in. So it's a kind of cool, like, behind the scenes. We're traveling, you know, we're going from Manhattan to Brooklyn. Hear our chat. To access this Patreon-only episode, please go to patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Please rate and review us on iTunes. You can also find us on SoundCloud. And on Facebook. Very excited to be talking to Liza.
It's great to be here, Katie.
Yeah, you're one of my favorite and most recurring guests.
I love being on your show.
Hey, thank you. I'm sitting back here in this chair. I feel like Barbara Walters. Because I'm sitting in like a cushy chair. You're sitting on in a normal chair. So you're a really prolific writer.
Thank you. Yeah, I currently am like forced to write a lot, which is good.
Liza is a journalist, a feminist. You write a really great advice column at The Nation called Asking for a Friend.
Thank you.
You're a staff writer on Jacobin. You also have a piece about Elizabeth Warren and Sanders. That's a very nuanced defense of supporting Sanders over Warren. So I really like this one because I do think that sometimes I get frustrated with the neoliberal shill, this, that, and it's frustrating. I mean, again, this is more of an online thing.
Because those are weak arguments.
Yeah, I
have to admit I was inspired by the online discourse to write this.
Yeah.
Like, because it's more there than anywhere else.
Right, exactly. So, and then people think, you know, I mean, if anything, the scary thing is that the online stuff, the liberal online stuff is actually reflected in actual established media, right?
Yes.
So like you see Joanne Reed, Joan Walsh making these arguments that are online, whereas these arguments that we see from the left or so-called left, they're not represented in any establishment media.
No. And so sometimes I always feel a little conflicted about how to respond to dumb left arguments that get traction on the online, because I mean, I'm obviously not a big player in the larger scheme of things, but within the left, I am fairly well known, and so it can seem like punching down if I go and criticize some people who are just, you know, some Twitter randos.
Right.
But at the same time, sometimes certain dumb left ideas get a lot of momentum.
Right.
within the left, and they influence.
And
they influence us, and then it's like then there we are as a movement making bad arguments.
Right. Exactly.
And I hate to see that. So sometimes I'm like, okay, I have to intervene with.
Right. Exactly. And also, it's like, do you want to give them more oxygen? Right.
No,
so that's the
I
other
know.
Thing. Right. But I do think it's worth like. So this piece that you...
A Newsweek reporter called me the other day about a Jacobin piece in which I had taken on some left, bad left arguments.
Ah, interesting.
And I was like, no.
Right.
Because, like, I mean, these particular arguments don't need to be in Newsweek.
Yeah, exactly, right.
And your audience hasn't heard them yet, so they don't need to hear what I think
about
them.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So,
They're like, what do you think of the Trotskyist versus tanky interpretations?
It was different. It was like the...
No, I was
the,
just trying to think of something equally
but it was,
unknown
it,
to Newsweek.
It might as well
yeah.
have been as silly as that.
Right.
Yeah.
So you write this piece, Warren is no Hillary, she's also no Bernie. The feud between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren supporters is getting ridiculous. Warren isn't Hillary and Bernie is no sexist. And you say Elizabeth Warren is not a neoliberal. And you give her credit. You say she's emerged as relatively mild but nevertheless quite serious opponent of neoliberal ideology, the worldview in which markets can solve everything. And in Margaret Thatcher's words, there is no such thing as society. One of the best points, though, I think that you make, which is so important, and it's so obvious in some ways, but it's not stated enough, and I think sometimes we just forget it because it's like there, we don't even see it because it's right in front of us. Of course, Bernie Sanders surely has some sexist supporters. Given the prevalence of knuckleheads in the population, if he lacked any appeal to such people, he'd probably still be hanging out in Burlington, Vermont.
I know. I always feel like you can't say that often enough.
Yeah,
right?
It's really true, right? And it's like if as these as critics of Sanders, quote unquote feminist critics of Sanders, claim, if misogyny is systemic and widespread. And structural and, you know, ingrained in our culture and whatever, of course it's going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's offensive and trivializing and downplays sexism and misogyny to pretend that it's one group, one political, you know, subgroup has a monopoly on it.
Yeah. And it's sort of like a bizarre, it's more idealistic even than anything they could accuse us of, to imagine that we could produce
a left candidate
whose supporters would never act in that way.
Right,
like,
yeah.
It's absurd. I mean, I'm with Hillary Clinton having won the popular vote by more than 3 million, I promise some misogynist guys voted
yes.
for her.
Right, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's right. just how that's the world right
well,
now.
As Leslie mm-hmm. Lee said, who hosts Struggle Session and, you know, started the Sanders made me, Bernie made me white hashtag a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. he was saying how, you know, there was a study out that said that Donald Trump's voters were racist. And he, of course, has no illusions about this. But he said, there are Donald Trump supporters who are racist. There are also Bernie supporters who are racist. There are also Clinton supporters who are racist. He goes, and as a racist herself, Clinton should have had an easier time winning them over.
Yes.
And he said, but Obama went for those voters. You know, that's another but related issue,
yeah.
which is like this. Whenever they say we have purity politics, I'm like, are you kidding? You want to turn your back on... or not even pursue the votes of people who, don't have any empathy, but don't we need to win? Don't you want those votes? If you care about the victims of Trumpism, we need to be trying to reach everyone.
Yeah, you need to be serious.
Yeah. And this narrative that, like, somehow pursuing, that you need to throw people under the bus, non-straight white men, that they need to be thrown under the bus to reach white working class is absurd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And no one can, if you ask them what's an example of doing that, they'll never give you one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, I do think, though, that it is harder now to distinguish between Bernie and his and Warren than it was with Bernie and Clinton. And as you say, there's much more of a difference between him and Clinton and him and... and Warren. So what are some of the reasons that you think that Sanders is a better candidate?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that I think that one of the reasons the feud is getting the tension between the two groups of supporters because the candidates seem fine with each other.
Yeah.
But the tension between the two groups of supporters is probably I think it I think the one reason it's so intense is that both sides feel especially threatened by the closeness. Like so for Warren supporters, they see no real difference politically between Warren and Sanders, or they see a difference and it's in Warren's favor because maybe they're less progressive.
Right.
But if they are progressive, they see no difference, and so it just seems sexist and impractical that these people would adhere to Bernie Sanders.
Right.
On the Bernie Sanders side, which is of course our side, a lot of them are really enraged by what they see, by the fact that they see the differences as huge, and they're angry that the differences are being erased by a media that covers Warren fairly positively, except for some of these inconsistencies. And they feel that as she adopts Bernie's platform, which she does, the reason that she is so progressive is two words: Bernie Sanders. Elizabeth Warren is not so bad in herself.
Right.
She is a good liberal. But the reason that she is running as left a campaign as she is 100% Bernie Sanders. Had his heart attack proved more serious the other day, we would have seen Elizabeth Warren moving to the right, I promise.
Yeah. Which is what Harry Reid told, I don't know if you saw this, Harry Reid told Axelrod she was going to do that if present. He's like, she's going to...
Of course. So I think the way to view Elizabeth Warren is as a triumph of Bernie Sanders and his movement, that she is running such a left campaign. Yet, ideally, we would still defeat her and Bernie would be the nominee.
Right.
And the reason that that's the ideal scenario is that Bernie Sanders is accountable to a mass movement, grassroots movement that has been working really hard to elect him. Not only that, he's spent his entire career, and especially the last few years, really building a movement that connects, that centers working class people, and that's just not been done in a presidential campaign.
Yeah.
Not by a major party candidate. Since ever, really.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I mean, when I mean, Eugene V. Debs was not a major party candidate. Running. I mean, not somebody who stood to win.
Not out of jail for a lot of it.
I mean, yeah, no, it's not. I'm not criticizing.
No. I'm saying he ran from jail, It's a funny comparison.
Yet the importance of his campaign and the fact that he ran for president is so significant that we know it, you know.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much about American radical history that we don't know.
Yeah.
But we actually know this.
Yeah.
We know
we knew who Debs was before, but most people haven't heard of him, right?
But most people, are listening to you probably know who he is.
Right.
And yet Bernie Sanders' campaign is more significant than Debs' campaign, and is making more of an impact on the political culture. So I think that whereas on the other hand, Elizabeth Warren is accountable not to this broad movement, not to the left, not to the many movements that have been for so many decades making America a little bit more civilized, whether through the civil rights movement, feminism, LGBT,
and
labor movements, and more recently the socialist movement. I mean, Bernie Sanders is of and accountable to all of those movements, which are the reason that our Our civilization is not already a crumbling wreck.
Right, exactly.
You know? Yeah. I mean, and so, and whereas Elizabeth Warren is accountable to a set of much more modest to sometimes destructive forces.
Right.
I mean, she's the professional managerial class, the better parts of the ruling class, but are still the ruling class.
Right.
They still don't want significant change. And she certainly has some appeal to ordinary Americans, but she doesn't have any accountability to those ordinary Americans.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, she does not come out of any particular social movements, and there are no social movements to really hold her to her promises.
Yeah.
I like that she talks about Medicare for All. I like that she mentions the Green New Deal. I love that she plagiarized Bernie's labor platform, which was the most astounding aspect of this presidential campaign. But to say I don't trust her sounds too personal.
Right.
I'm not saying that I don't trust her because she's a sketchy person. I don't even think that. I just think when you look at the balance of forces in our society, the forces behind Bernie are the forces that want all these good things to happen.
Right.
The forces behind Elizabeth Warren are perfectly fine with her moving to the right as soon as she gets into power.
Right. Socially liberal.
Yeah.
And not that you can totally separate those things, of course, but nominally socially liberal is, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, much better than Trump, I think she would do environmental regulation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right.
She would do the Paris Accords.
Yes.
I mean, it would be vastly, vastly better. And I think that we sometimes lose sight of that.
No, yeah.
Whereas like it's, you know, when you imagine the Biden presidency, your mind just goes blank trying to think what it would be.
So does his, apparently.
I know.
As we see a lot on stage.
Well, I think that's there's a connection.
So it's interesting because...
So she's much better than Biden,
too.
But I think that while we still have the power to move this Bernie campaign forward and potentially make Bernie Sanders president, then, you know, absolutely, we should keep fighting to do that.
Yeah. I happen to also think he's a lot more electable against Trump.
Oh, that's the other thing. Thank you.
That's the
almost more crucial than their specific differences.
Right.
The only way in which she could conceivably be more electable is sometimes that alliance with the ruling class can help us. You know, the reason we were able to save most of Obamacare under Trump was that large portions of the ruling class wanted to save Obamacare because they benefited.
Right.
So it is true that the ruling class will probably, parts of it would mobilize for her against Trump and would help. But it's just kind of like, so first of all, that is also a point against her.
Right.
Because why do they want her?
Sure, right. That's not a point against her electability, but it's a point against her as a president.
It's a point for her electability, but it's a point against her as a president.
Right.
But more broadly, Bernie shows the possibility that we could get something done in politics without them. We could do this without the ruling class, and that would be better because really want them
calling the shots.
We don't want them calling the shots. We don't want them defining what the policy is going to be. So it's actually a point in Bernie's favor, and he is probably much, much more electable. Partly because he doesn't have some of the liabilities that Warren has. She does have some inconsistencies in some of the ways that she's talked about things. She has some minor, in my view, very minor scandals, but scandals that could prove extremely distracting and extremely fun for Trump.
Exactly, right.
And we know that Trump is somebody who really revels in the pleasure of the personal attack.
Right.
And there's very little in Bernie Sanders' background to inspire that. He has been in public life so long and nothing ever comes up.
Yeah. If anything, they call him the same ideas. He's stubborn, right? Yeah. Like,
I mean, they had to make a scandal of him having a new coat.
Oh my God!
You know, I mean, this is that the level of this is what they're reduced.
It was an expensive coat, and okay, between friends, I just have to say, I remember when I saw that, I saw him, and it was like a $700 coat. Of course, who cares? But I have to say, I was like, I can't imagine Bernie getting that. I imagine him being in the store, someone suggesting it for him, he's like, no, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to spend $700 on a coat. And turns out it was a gift from his son who works for the company.
Of course.
So I was like, not that I would have cared, but it was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
No, it was
sense.
Out of character.
Yeah, it was just out
it was
of
always
character.
Weird.
Yeah.
Like, it was always stupid, but kind of
yeah,
weird.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You're totally right.
Right?
Yeah. And so this is what they're reduced to. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, man in who lives in very cold climate
right.
for part of the time buys serious
right.
coat.
Right.
And whereas, like, you know, there's a lot.
Has a third house, which is... Every single senator has at least two houses.
Of course.
His are much more modest. And they used, again, this shouldn't matter, but they used Jane's inheritance.
Of course. It's ridiculous. And so so she seems to have exaggerated
yes.
about being
Native
American.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think things like that are
yes.
are going to be
a
lot of fun for the Republicans, and that Bernie has no comparable
right.
liabilities.
Yeah. He can call him. He can say he's like a... And this narrative of him never being vetted, it's so ridiculous. I mean, okay, you can call him a communist, a leftist, you can call him old, you can call him the heart attack thing. As Nathan Robbins had said, though, on my show a year ago maybe, that, and he makes a really good point. He says that maybe against Rubio or Cruz, Warren is more electable.
Oh,
but
yeah.
against Trump, Sanders is. Sanders definitely is against Trump.
Yeah.
And he says if Trump tries to make something of the age, Sanders should challenge him to a one-on-one game of basketball. Which he should. He should wait a little bit because
yes.
of the heart thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
he would totally kick Trump's ass.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And basketball is a far more, as I understand it, not playing either, I understand basketball to be a far more intense sport than golf.
Yes, exactly. So. Right. Although golf must be great for the obliques. But yeah, besides that, yeah. Right. That's such a great metaphor. Yeah, I agree. And it's like, she, I think, has bad political instincts in many cases. I
mm-hmm.
think when she got her DNA test, that was a great example of it. And, you know, Trump goes after people's inconsistencies. And one of the things that makes Sanders unique, even if you don't like him, right? People who don't like him say he's too stubborn, he doesn't evolve. They're like, he's been saying the same things. It's like, what world do you live in where talking about Medicare for all is no longer relevant?
Right.
Right?
He keeps saying the same things because the same things keep being
yeah,
important.
Right.
And in fact, like, he has accommodated as other things became important. Like, he talks about climate change now
oh,
much
yeah.
more
he's
than
at the front
he used
of that.
To.
Yeah, right.
I mean, although he has been talking about that much longer than
right.
any other politician.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but he's made it really front and center more than
yeah.
he, yeah.
No, it's so funny. It's like, and that I think is such a, I know that people are sort of sick of hearing this phrase, but I do think that is such a professional managerial class critique, the idea that you always have to be saying something new
right,
or
right.
innovative
yeah, exactly.
or clever.
Right.
It's like, no.
Right.
I mean, Bernie keeps saying the same thing
right.
because those are the important things. Like,
yeah.
I mean, people in this country are suffering, and they have been, and they
right.
continue to be, and he's going to keep talking about
right.
that as long as that's the situation.
Right. Like, he'll stop talking about Medicare yeah. for all when we have Medicare for all, maybe, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then he can find a new topic.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we all
like... Is he supposed to be over climate change? Like, that's so last year that
Yeah,
passe.
No, but I think that's this mentality.
So
like
stupid.
they live in a world of branding.
I know, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So many liberals and Dems don't understand. They still don't get how Trump works.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say Warren has these inconsistencies that he'll exploit, they say, are you kidding? Trump is so inconsistent. But he doesn't claim not to be.
No.
He doesn't. So he's,
no.
It's like there's a meta hypocrisy and then there's hypocrisy. Trump is on a regular hypocrisy. Trump
yeah.
is hypocritical all the time.
Yeah.
Now, when Biden or Warren are hypocrites, they're hypocrites on the whatever level, normal level, but also meta level, because their shtick is that they're not hypocrites.
Right.
So
right.
Trump isn't vulnerable.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, yeah. It's like same thing with the grab by the pussy. Well, he just goes to the Clinton people because Clinton pretends to be for women's rights and pretends to be a feminist, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it makes so everything makes them look so much more ridiculous than him.
I mean, remember, I almost cracked up when he said that Hillary Clinton talked about super predators. He's like, I thought that was very rude. He said that during a debate.
Oh,
like,
yes.
You took out a full page ad in the Daily News calling for the death penalty around the Central Park Five. Like, he's so, but it doesn't matter. No one cares.
No, I think it's amazing, and I sometimes think of Trump is like a teenager trolling his parents.
I have
a teenager, I know something about this, and so the Democrats or liberals in general are like the parents. So he'll throw out these outrageous things so that they will react.
Exactly.
Then they'll react.
Right.
And then often he'll say, well, I was just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, which is exactly what a teenager does.
Right.
And like, but now he's made them look ridiculous.
Exactly.
Because they've lost their minds.
Right.
And I feel like Elizabeth Warren and the liberals are like, they're going to be like regular parents. Like they're just going to constantly be reacting in the wrong way and losing their minds and being continually trolled and made to look dumb.
Right.
Whereas like Bernie Sanders is on another level. Like he's just going to be like, he's going to be like Medicare for all.
Yeah.
Brush your damn teeth.
Yeah, exactly.
Do your homework.
Yeah.
He's going to be that parent who no matter what is thrown at him, he just keeps repeating the talking points.
And he won't react.
Which is the only way to do it, really.
Right.
But most people, forget.
Yeah.
You know, and whereas Elizabeth Warren is going to be like, now I have to respond to this Pocahontas
thing. Which is why I thought the DNA thing, like beyond the political, the moral, ethical stuff, I just thought it was such a bad bad instinct, again, political instinct.
No, the only way to respond to that would be to ignore it or pivot or be like, I don't know why you're not talking about indigenous rights.
Or
make absurd jokes.
But exactly
the wrong way is to try to take it seriously
and respond. Put any effort into disproving or responding. I like the way that you go through some specific examples of how they're different, because I do think that something, and you say, for people who prefer to discuss issues, most voters are not especially ideological. Sanders is better on those policy areas where he and Warren differ. That's because rejecting capitalism affects the way a person thinks about everything. So I think one of the things that makes it harder to talk about Sanders and Warren than it was with Sanders and mm-hmm. Clinton is two things. One is she is better than Clinton.
Yeah.
The other is that Sanders has shifted everything to the left. So all these people are supporting those things, like Medicare for all, at least nominally, right?
Exactly.
And I think that when you say this to people, you know, I think that a lot of people don't care that she says she's a capitalist to her bones,
right?
Because they're like, well, what does that mean?
Because it sounds like an abstract ideology.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
Right.
And I think that what's important to draw out of that is like the vast majority. What makes Sanders more electable than Warren compared to Trump, against Trump?
Yeah.
And also what makes him better and why we support him more is that the working class is central to his politics. This is what it really means to be anti-capitalist.
Right.
That you support the working class against capital.
Right.
You know, you could say that in a more populist and less Marxist way.
Sure,
you
can
say, Sanders is centering the 99%
or
whatever. But the people who are at the heart of Sanders' politics are the majority of people, which is what makes his politics both more electable and also more right.
Right, exactly. More left.
More correct and more left.
And then people will say, you know, well, look, he's hate, as you point this out, he's hate, uniquely hated by very bad people. And again, I think that people say, okay, but still, tell me the difference. And so one of the things you do is you say, While it's true that Warren supports Medicare for all on paper, she has recently waffled on the matter. Relatedly, Sanders' view that abortion should be part of a full reproductive health care plan offered under single payer is stronger and more specific than Warren's pro-choice position. She talks a lot about strong military and military readiness, while Sanders has been doggedly leading the fight to end the devastating war in Yemen. Warren is a committed fan of American global power.
And by the way, these are huge differences.
Right, exactly.
For people out there who are still thinking, oh, I'm not really clear about the differences. These
right, that's why I think this is good, because I do think that, you know, the capitalism versus not anti-capitalism is important, but it only goes so far, especially if you're not, if you're someone who's not interested in political theory.
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah,
I don't care.
Yeah.
The fact that he's more hated by bad people is evidence of a difference. But again, what's the difference? So I like that you go through them. And you know, one of the places that the president has the most unilateral power is foreign policy. And that's definitely a place where they're different.
Yes.
Love when people who are like to the, who like Warren more than Sanders on, and include their, the foreign policy as one of the reasons, then criticize Sanders from the left on something. Like, what do you, I was disappointed he called like Maduro a tyrant. That was stupid. A brutal dictator, brutal tyrant. But it's, every now and then you get these total opportunists like Tom Watson or whatever coming in there.
It's so bizarre. Sometimes you get this alliance between like the ultra-lefts who are too left to support any candidate and the liberals who hate Sanders.
Yeah, they're like, look at him on Libya. And you're like, you don't even care about Libya. You liked Hillary. Was like, we came, he died, we left or whatever, we left.
Yeah.
And of course, this is another interesting thing, which is it's a little inconvenient that... after the Bernie bro narrative and was so invested in, all of a sudden it turns out that Sanders voters are less white and less male and all and then anyone else's, including Warren's. And why is that not an issue? I thought that was such an issue.
Yeah.
I thought that's what one of the big things that determined.
Yeah. And again, this is one of the things that gets to the heart of what we were discussing earlier, that people defending a more centrist politics or even just a more liberal politics always want to make this opposition between a class politics and race and gender.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? The working class is women and people of color.
Right.
And that is why they are also supporting Bernie Sanders, the candidate who has placed the working class at the center of his specific policy platform and his whole politics.
Right.
I mean, and so this is like these things are constantly false oppositions.
Right.
And whenever anybody tries to put these things in opposition, we should always look very skeptically at what is the agenda.
Right. Yeah. And again, one of the blessings or one of the hard things. One of the victories of Sanders is that he's made these ideas more, less toxic or opposing them more toxic, right? Which is why you have Beto on. And I think that's good. Some of my fellow leftists, our fellow leftists are like, how dare they stand on that debate stage and pretend they're for Medicare for all? It's like, no, we want the discussion to shift left. If they somehow pretended it was them and not Sanders, that's bad. But
and we would need them in like the Senate or wherever they're going to be to vote for these
things. Of course, yeah.
And so ideally, they keep pretending.
Yeah, exactly. Keep pretending, right? And then we can call them out when they don't do that. That's better on, you know,
much better.
Some of the reasons that you think that Sanders is better. These examples you gave were good. I didn't know about the abortion thing.
This is a great left feminist. Speaking of the ideology that doesn't get enough attention,
right?
So left feminists have been saying for years. I think Red Stockings was the first one to make this connection in 1989. That the best way to protect abortion rights and abortion accessibility was to demand full reproductive rights in the context of national healthcare, of single payer healthcare, and they said that in 1989, and it started to get a little more traction among progressive feminists, the Boston Women's Healthcare Book Collective.
Our Bodies Ourselves
put out a little paper on that in the like about maybe 15 years after that, and now it's in Bernie Sanders' campaign platform for president.
Right.
He's the only one. He's the only one for whom that's his abortion position.
Right.
And that is literally the best way to make abortion available to everybody. As most listeners will know, abortion is technically legal in the United States, but the barriers are formidable,
right?
Because women receiving Medicaid don't have abortions covered. Many women don't have abortion covered by their health insurance. I think actually most do not. And abortion is expensive. A lot of people
right.
can't get it where they live and have to travel. So this, like, as a demand, as part of full and free healthcare, is the best way to go and the most democratic. So Bernie Sanders, influenced by the left,
right.
by the left side of the feminist movement, has had this in his platform all along. He had it also in 2016,
right.
and didn't get enough attention
yeah.
then either. But it's incredibly important. Actually, Red Stockings, which is still around, celebrating its 50th anniversary.
Wow.
It's kind of nice that the most left of the second wave groups
yeah.
is the one that's still around.
Yeah.
And Red Stockings is campaigning around it now, along with their spinoff, National Women's Liberation, and of course, DSA and DSA Socialist Feminists are
right.
also like working on this
right.
as well.
And I'm having Jenny Brown on
yes.
my show.
Oh yes. So Jenny Brown. This is all. In fact, thank you. This is all fresh in my mind
yeah.
because I just interviewed
yeah.
Jenny Brown.
Right. Take that, Sadie.
Yes. So I interviewed her at the Strand, and we'll be publishing the Q&A on Jacobin Magazine, where we are totally not feminist
exactly,
and never
yeah.
run any feminist content.
So really quickly to wrap up a few things. I was going to say that, you know, in 2016, it was so nice. You could just show the difference, the economic, social, racial, gender connection with Fight for 15. You had one candidate
mm-hmm.
who supported
yes.
it, one who didn't. The majority of minimum wage earners are people of color, women. And why weren't all the feminists and alleged feminists and anti-racists enraged that Clinton was okay with $12 and not supporting this movement, the Fight for 15 movement?
Yeah, it was outrageous.
And that's such a great example of, for people who don't get the... Like, someone like Sadie is cynical. She understands that exists and doesn't care. But a lot of people, and I think we have to do a better job of this, of just explaining, like, how representation mm-hmm. is important.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. also, you can, you know, issues are important, and that may not line up,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that's right.
Let's give Sadie Doyle a reading list, the things that you wrote, what she could have read.
Yeah.
And I'm sure when she hears this, she'll
attract
this.
I think the sex worker piece
yeah.
is really something that she should read, because I'm sure she supports sex worker
right.
rights. I'm sure she's not one of those feminists who doesn't. You know, because I don't think that she's conservative in that way.
Right.
And that's
a great piece. Why socialists should support sex workers' rights.
Thank you. I definitely recommend looking too at all the work that sex workers are doing on this issue. Decrim NY is a good resource of the groups that are working on this. I wrote this because I thought that while it's so great to see the support for decriminalization of sex work among socialists and how that has people have been taking that so seriously. But I didn't really think that people were explaining why it was a socialist
right.
issue, and that most of the left arguments that I have heard about it were fairly similar to libertarian
right.
arguments, and I'm so glad that there are libertarian
yeah,
arguments
yeah.
about it, because
yeah.
that persuades more people
right, exactly,
of a
yeah.
necessary thing that will make a lot of people's lives better. But I also thought, no, but there are. It's not just that in some places the left lines up with libertarianism, although that is sometimes the case, like as in reproductive choice. But you know, we agree with the libertarians on things that they're right, and we disagree
yeah.
with them
yeah.
when they're wrong. But it's also that this is a left issue in some specific ways. One is that it's really about improving people's working conditions.
Right.
And that that when sex work is illegal, the working conditions of those largely women, although also trans, yeah, non-binary, and sometimes men as well, are very bad. I mean, working conditions where you are constantly being harassed by the police, where you face police brutality, where you face violence and rape, and you can't, and robbery, and you can't report it. These are very terrible working conditions, and it's it is more difficult to negotiate your wages. It's more difficult to advertise your services in safe ways.
Right.
Everything about that is harder. So. So fundamentally, it's about making workers' conditions better, and you know, we have tended to kind of simplify that just as sex work is work,
right?
Which is also important. But I had wanted to spell that out a little more. Also, I felt that some of the left feminist arguments that I've heard on the other side are based on a bit of a misunderstanding, I think, of what leftism is. Uh-huh. So I've heard the argument that, well, as leftists, we're against commodification.
Right.
So why would we want to make it permissible to commodify yet another thing, that is, when the commodification of that thing, sex, is so broadly distasteful to so many people.
Right.
And I feel really strongly that that is based on a kind of aesthetic understanding of why commodification is bad.
Right.
You know, kind of like, you know, we feel upset when a Stereolab song is used in a car commercial.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
but that's actually not the problem with commodification. The
right.
problem with commodification is that basic human needs we have to pay for, like
right.
healthcare,
right.
you know, food, housing,
yeah.
you know, and that those things should be socialized. You know, those things should be free because people need them for survival. Sex is literally the opposite of that. I know we all need love and we
right.
all do need sex at some level, but we actually don't need it to survive. And nobody has a right to sex because it requires consent.
Right, exactly.
You
yeah.
know? And so it's actually one of the least immoral things you could commodify.
Right.
I mean,
right.
if you
yeah.
think about it, it's
yeah.
like it's more. It would be more moral to commodify sex than to commodify food.
Right. You say from a socialist point of view, yeah. it's far more ethical to charge money for sex than for food. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was another thing. Is I felt like the arguments could use a little bit of escalation in their reasoning.
Yeah, because it's not just like a harm reduction argument, which I think
right.
is really important.
Really important.
Yeah, right? It's like,
yeah.
I mean, forget ideology for a second. Like,
yeah.
And this is what
Yeah, people are suffering,
yeah.
and this would alleviate a
right.
lot of people's suffering.
Yeah, and if you think it's, mm. If you want to protect people, right, if you're protecting sex workers, which is like, let's pause how that would even look like, but okay, so we should make boxing illegal.
Right.
Right. We should make working
football.
In. Yeah. Football. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Melissa Gira Grant, I had her on a while ago, and I remember she said something that I was like, oh, yeah, that's it. She's like, people love talking about their feelings about sex work, but not sex workers. Like,
yes.
they, you know,
yeah.
so like, I don't care if you think, and there is a range, but you could think that sex work is inherently demeaning. You could think it's inherently liberating. You could think anything between whatever it is. You don't want those people.
Yeah.
pushed into the underbelly of society. Like,
yeah,
we do that with every other job. I don't understand.
I know. It is so weird, and people do think that their feelings should have some bearing on the
yeah.
argument.
Yeah, and then the Nordic model that some people defend, which is where
yeah.
you punish the Johns and not the sex
yeah.
workers. Don't they get how that works?
It's so crazy.
Right. You don't want your customer to be arrested because that's your customer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, and you I mean, if you want to continue to do a job, you don't really want any of your customers to get arrested.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's, yeah.
It makes no sense. And and of course, you have former sex workers who are against decriminalization. You have former sex workers who are for it. You have current sex workers who are for it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what is the end game? You make it illegal, then what mm-hmm. happens? Then yeah. you volunteer to, like, sponsor someone and get them a job or whatever. Like, yeah. And then the argument that it's trafficking, as you point out, no, that's, this actually makes it easier to respond to trafficking.
Much, because, like, as it is currently, people are afraid to come forward about things like that because they could be prosecuted.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know, I mean,
exactly. So if they know someone who was kidnapped and brought here against their will or whatever, you don't have to be, you know, yeah. you can be born
no,
here.
No, scholars who have looked at this are very clear that decriminalization would help
yeah.
with problems like trafficking or underage kids.
Yeah.
I mean, that, like, those kinds of problems are already illegal.
Right. Yeah.
And decriminalizing sex work in itself would only help.
Right.
So, yeah.
It shouldn't be under the same umbrella.
Yeah.
And when you put them under the same umbrella, you're diluting, you know, whatever you're doing to get. Yeah.
Yeah. And I should say, there's so much happening on this issue right now, and it's great. I mean, there's a lot of sex workers have been organizing on this for years, and now actually a lot of sex workers are in DSA, and organizing as with DSA and Julia Salazar,
yeah.
our New York newly elected socialist state senator, sponsored a bill
yeah.
to decriminalize sex work, so that's really exciting. And we almost elected a district
Tiffany
attorney
Caban.
In Queens, Tiffany Caban.
She'd come on my show earlier. Could have all been different. Just kidding.
That was her mistake.
Yeah, exactly. I don't get it. I guess it's like, it's so paternalistic also to think all these people who are organizing as sex workers, they're what, they're pawns? They don't know what they're playing into the patriarchy?
I don't know. I mean, I think there is kind of a paternalistic,
yeah.
I think there's kind of a paternalistic attitude. There's also sort of a, there's a strain in feminism that, kind of regards, all sex
right.
as violence.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, so some of this does grow out of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck with that one.
Yeah, exactly.
And
a very popular,
I know.
Of view.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and the banality of insurgency, another great piece you wrote, which is a very important piece. There's nothing inherently radical about insurgency. Centrists, once bitten in the ass by the rhetoric of newness and change, are warning to it. Now they're getting revenge by barring the narrative in service of their own banal candidates. It turns out throwing the bums out isn't an ideology, nor is it even a left or progressive goal in itself. Some of these new centrist young bloods are significantly more conservative than the old white guys they're challenging. And you mentioned Joe Kennedy, who's challenging Ed Markey, he's a fucking Kennedy, first of all.
Yeah.
A Kennedy.
I know.
And it's a great metaphor because you have Joe Crowley, the old
yes.
fart that, you know, Ocasio kicked out. He's like how
raising money
for Kennedy.
Yeah,
so thanks for making it so clear. Thanks for the optics.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. No, when I saw that was when I knew I had to write this piece.
Yeah,
it was an issue that had been bothering me for a while, but sometimes a certain event brings it all into relief.
Right, yeah. And it's kind of similar to the, it reminds me of the weaponization of identity politics, right?
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, no, sometimes we, like, there will be these feel-good narratives that
right.
we all feel good about, like, in theory, like the first woman president,
right.
or the new blood, you know,
yeah.
Knocking out the old white men, and you know, what we have to remember is the neoliberal side, the ruling class side, always has more
yeah,
money for PR
yeah.
than we do. I mean, so any kind of narrative like that they can steal that from us.
Yeah.
They can steal that from us so easily. And where we always have to stay focused on is our socialist working class politics
and the issues, right?
And the issues intertwined with that politics. And this and that was a great example because the so we've got Joe Crowley, who is working for a lobbying firm,
right?
Where Trent Lott is a colleague,
the big fan of Strom Thurmond.
Yeah,
lest anyone forget who he is. Yeah.
And you know, there and fossil fuel companies are major clients, and it's like, yeah, of course, his friends at Peyton Boggs would love to get rid of Ed Markey, who
right.
is co-sponsoring the Green New Deal
yeah.
with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Nothing would please them more.
Right.
And of course, like I'm sure Crowley has like a revenge fantasy
yeah.
against
yeah.
AOC
yeah.
For his personal
right.
dignity
despite
reasons.
Born, Baby You Were Born to Run. Did you see he did that at his concession party?
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
But then he liked
I know, that
on
was
a,
that
yeah.
was sweet, but only briefly.
Well, yeah, then he turned back. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and... You know, and Ed Markey is another, like, I mean, he's an interesting example of how liberals get better when the left is stronger.
Right.
You know, he's
yeah.
sort of like a traditional liberal, and with AOC there, he's like, he was really emboldened
right.
to do something real and serious and you know, for the working class and for the planet.
Right,
yeah. You know, with the Green New Deal. So that's like, if she wasn't there, he'd be just, you know, kind of a decent but regular Democrat.
Right.
But
yeah.
But it's like, so it's, yeah, it's important to, it's important to support these allies and to not get, not, and also to not let the centrists steal these,
right.
Co-opt these stories, you know, but also understand that these stories are just stories, and
right.
that we really have to stick to our actual politics.
Right,
issues.
Issues. So. That's why, whether it's a new young person who has crappy politics, or whether it's a heart attack, you just go back to the issues.
Exactly.
As Bernie teaches us.
Exactly.
I'm waiting right. for him to be like, I was thinking, like, it'd be a great reality TV show, so Bernie has a heart attack, and then he comes back, he's like, if anything, it taught me to fight even harder for this. Then he should go out and, like, get kicked out of a home or something. He gets evicted. And they're
yeah.
like, are you okay? You're homeless. And I was like, if anything, it's taught me to fight even harder for affordable housing. Like,
exactly. Yeah. No matter what happens.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Liza. This has been great.
Thank
yeah.
you, Katie. My
and,
pleasure.
Everyone should check out her writing at Jacobin. Also, her great column at The Nation. Called Asking for a Friend, the advice column. It's really great. The recent one is especially fun to read. And they can find her on, find you on Twitter
at L Feathers.
L Feathers, right?
Yeah, L Feather
with
a Z.
Z yeah.
yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Liza. That was great. Thanks so much for listening to The Katie Halper Show. Don't forget to listen to the Patreon-only Double Whammy episode, which includes a chat with Liza Featherstone, who strikes back at feminist bullies, or pseudo-feminist bullies, I should say, and a chat with Leslie Lee about the Joker, as well as other interesting topics. That's at patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehalpershow. Liza Featherstone is a journalist based in New York City and a contributing editor to The Nation, where she also writes the advice column Asking for a Friend. She is co-author of Students Against Sweatshops, The Making of a Movement, Selling Women Short, The Landmark Battle for Workers' Rights at Walmart, Divining Desire, Focus Groups in the Culture of Consultation, and she's the editor of the book False Choices, The Faux Feminism of Hillary Clinton. The Katie Halper Show is edited by Ted Reedy. Our theme song is by the band Cordova. Thank you.